on. Speaking of leaving town, our good friend Luke Vargas, chief foreign correspondent for Talk Media News, he's leaving town, joining us from New York's JFK or airport before his long trip overseas to Russia and to the Baltics. Luke, thanks for taking time for us.
You're very welcome.
Good for you. I'm glad you're flying there because I would want no part of it.
I'm just transferring through. It was the cheapest flight at the last minute. If I wanted to go on United, I think it was like four times as much. So I bit the bullet. I wiped my hard drive on my computer so I can have a semblance of data security going through the Russian airport. But I will be onward to Latvia in about 24 hours' time.
Good for you. Good for you. So what are you expecting?
Well, I have a sort of a separate itinerary from the president. He is obviously going to the NATO meeting on Wednesday, where he's expected to berate our allies for not spending enough towards the NATO collective defense program. It's worth pointing out they are not bound to any number. They had said they wanted to hit 2% of GDP for each of their respective countries on national military spending, but there's no requirement on how much you contribute into NATO. And even the U.S., though we do contribute a lot to NATO, the share of our military spending that actually goes to NATO, I think it's in the single digits. So, you know, it's something you can come. Oh, my God, the French airline, very loud. Anyway, so we are expecting President Trump to really lay into NATO allies for their spending patterns. The real question is, though, the rhetoric is a given. Of course he's going to complain about their spending. But does he actually do anything about it?
Right.
The things that we would be watching for are, does he undermine the collective self-defense provisions of the NATO Charter, Article 5? Does he shift U.S. resources out of these forward military battalions that were set up several years ago in the Baltic and Eastern Europe? You know, essentially, or do we cancel joint military drills? A lot like President Trump sort of bought into Kim Jong-un's argument that it was destabilizing for the U.S. and Korean militaries to be cooperating together. Does he buy into the same logic from Vladimir Putin that we should maybe stop doing drills in Poland because that's seen as a threat to Russia? So those are some actions that we would be looking to see. And finally, I guess one more I'd throw out there is, does he maybe hint that the U.S. might be shifting its military presence out of Germany? That is something that some within the Trump administration have long been thinking about, maybe shifting our military assets in that country elsewhere. So again, the rhetoric is a given. He will insult our allies, I'm sure, and it will be a very awkward thing to compare his words of criticism directed at them compared to his words of praise for Vladimir Putin. But does he go beyond that and actually reshape America's alliance commitments? That's what I'll be watching to see.
Yeah, you know, I saw today the EU President Donald Tusk tweeted out that the U.S. Yep. doesn't have and won't have a much better ally than the EU. He said, we spend on defense as much more than Russia and as much as China. I hope you have no doubt in this investment in our security, which cannot be said with confidence about Russian or Chinese spending. He also went on to say, you basically don't have a lot of allies. Maybe you shouldn't be screwing with the ones you have.
Yeah, Tusk is exactly right, and there's more complexity that could be brought to bear here. I mean, it's worth pointing out, you know, if the United States, instead of criticizing or just focusing on top-dollar military spending, were to leverage, let's say, our military expertise, our training capabilities, our technological expertise, cyber resources, and say, look, maybe you don't need to spend more. We're going to help you find ways to spend better. For instance, across various smaller countries in Europe, you've got, you know, 10, 15 militaries that are each spending a substantial amount of money to put out an air force, to field a navy, you know, an army. Whereas maybe what you should do is, you know, enhance cooperation and find a way so that every third country really spends a lot of money on the navy and not only does that but masters it. And then every third country focuses on the air force, or every fourth country has a big cyber investment. That's something the president could choose to do with to get America involved with our allies. Instead, we're just hitting them overhead by just looking at the top dollar economic spending numbers, which again, to me, seems probably like the wrong approach here.
Well, I mean, it's look who we're talking about. I mean, honestly, you know, this is there isn't a lot of deep thought, I think, that goes into this.
No, I just want to know, you know, what the president, at least in his mind, feels like these countries have done to be bad allies other than not hitting some arbitrary spending limit. He just really is treating them as if they've done something wrong. I mean, I guess maybe in his view, France and Germany and the UK deciding not to completely torpedo the Iran deal at the same time President Trump decided to do that could be viewed as some sort of snub. But, it seems impossible to me to really understand how we could – I get the kind of insistence on the spending targets, but to paint these countries as having really betrayed us as allies in some other meaningful way, I don't get what you could possibly be looking at to make that case. But the President Trump is making that case nonetheless.
Well, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, honestly, and even his supporters will tell you he's somebody who values loyalty above all else. So, you know, as you pointed out, you know, they didn't go along in the Iran deal, which I got to assume during this NATO summit, they're going to be putting some pressure on these countries to ratchet up that pressure, no?
They will. I don't think they're going to get any success on that. I mean, Germany, Great Britain, and France are pretty clear about the fact that they are going to work with the Iranians hand in hand to try and make sure or take whatever steps they think they can to limit the economic fallout of the reimposition of sanctions. That is going to be a difficult undertaking. There really is no way to reimburse Iran for all of the costs that it is going to incur as the U.S. and others stop doing business with them. But the European, those three countries have been pretty steadfast in believing that the, you know, holding up the Iran deal is the right policy. President Trump having some sort of hissy fit over NATO spending and then having a meeting with Putin, is that the way to, convince these other countries to jump ship and join the U.S. on Iran policy? I don't think so. What I would really be watching for are sort of, and this is not something that's going to happen at the NATO meetings, but look at a country like India, a country that really wants to, you know, likes buying Iranian crude oil and would probably be put out a little bit if they are not given a sanctions exemption to continue buying it after November when our new sanctions on Iranian crude go into place. Those are the countries to watch, not these European ones, to see if there's going to be a change in Iran policy.
All right. And meanwhile, in Britain, you've got Theresa May, who appears to be in some kind of turmoil. What's going on?
Yeah, she's facing a spate of resignations of high-level members of her cabinet over her handling of the Brexit process. And I think when people hear that, they probably think, oh, you know, Brits are turning on Brexit. They are now want to remain in the European Union. That's the kind of pressure she's facing. There is a change of public perception to an extent. I think if the referendum were to be held again, the outcome would be different than it was 2 years ago. But what we're actually seeing here is something like a Tea Party movement, right, that is pulling the ruling conservative government further to the right, and in so doing, threatening Theresa May's grip on power. These are pro-Brexit hardliners who want the Theresa May's government to draw a line in the sand and really force a hard bargain with the European Union. And quite to the contrary, she has been sort of moderating her position a little bit, going towards a softer Brexit on complicated issues like what do you do at the border between Ireland and Northern Ireland. She has sort of capitulated and started to suggest that the UK might abide by European Union laws for several years into the future, if not indefinitely, in order to keep that border moving seamlessly. And that is, I think, indicative to some of these Brexit hardliners of surrender, right? They wanted to fully break from the European Union, get rid of all the things that tied together UK law and European law, UK tariffs and European tariff rules and things like that. And what they're finding is, if you want to keep all your promises from the past, you've got to compromise, but they don't want compromise. And so you've seen Boris Johnson, one of the best haired men in the world, along with President Trump, resigning on Monday, saying Britain is turning into a colony that's not capable of making its own decisions. And then the Brexit secretary himself, the man who's actually overseeing Theresa May's Brexit agenda, has also thrown in the towel, saying he doesn't like Theresa May's negotiating strategy. So she'll probably hang on to power. She's not going to get booted out while President Trump is in the country. But it would be an understatement to say Theresa May's sort of grasp on power is pretty shaky this week.
So do you see her getting booted while Trump's in town? Do we see
No,
her?
It would be, It would be sweet, right, to have her kicked out and Jeremy Corbyn thrust into power. I mean, that would be the ultimate, you know, hardline conservatives protesting against their conservative leader and then putting a socialist in. That's not going to happen, I don't think. We saw one attempt at a no-confidence vote come up Monday evening, and it failed. They're a vocal minority of the Conservative Party who don't like what she's doing, but they're not powerful enough just yet to be able to force her out of office. But it's hard to imagine the Brexit process getting any better for Theresa May over the next year. And next March is when Britain crashes out of the EU. So there's a lot of work to be done between now and then, and less agreement on exactly what Britain should be doing as the weeks go by.
Yeah, the scary part of what you just said is just yet.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have power just yet, but I fear they're moving in that direction.
It could be. It's the dynamics are, on some degree, I think the pro-Brexit hardliners in Great Britain are even more willing than, say, the Freedom Caucus in the United States to make a protest vote against their leader and potentially cause that to, you know, tank a broader conservative agenda so that they can say they stood their course. I think that can't be ruled out in Britain, that Theresa May might fall for in precisely that way.
Yeah. Let's take a look at Elon Musk. Evidently, he's investing in China. The big story today, going to build a plant there. Is that because of the perceived trade war, which, you know, I'll be honest, I've been honest from the beginning. I'm in favor of the tariffs. I think we have to do something. But is this part of that?
Yes and no. I mean, I am inclined to say no, because you look at the rest of the moves here, and you really look at how Tesla intends to make its money. I think they make about the low double digits of their market share right now, or sales are in China. China has a government plan to go 100% electric cars by the mid-2030s. If they get anywhere close to that, that is an incredibly large market for Tesla to sell its electric vehicles to. And so I just don't see the U.S. being able to match that. And the timing here certainly does suggest Elon Musk is fleeing the United States at a time President Trump is trying to keep businesses in the United States. And yes, they have raised some prices to try and cover the difference caused by U.S. tariffs in recent weeks. But I think this is much more about Tesla just doing what businesses do, which is pursue what's in the best interest for their bottom line. They see China as a market they want not just to sell their vehicles, but as a market where they have a lot of respect. And as such, they're also investing not just in manufacturing, but in research and development within China, so that country, you know, that company gradually has sort of more and more of a Chinese identity as the years pass. That, I think, for Elon Musk is just good business.
No, and what it is, look, we've been hostile to the electric car industry. We've been hostile to renewable energy. We've been hostile to solar panels and wind and all of that. So why wouldn't you go?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say that. President Trump has created a landscape where, you know, Tesla feels like it's very much at home under the current administration. So, and
yeah,
China,
I mean, it's just not Trump, though. I mean, the Republicans all during the Obama years did everything they could possibly do to kill the solar industry and kill any renewables. So I'm not surprised on this. And finally, I guess a federal judge has said Monsanto can face trial over Roundup, the weed killer. Really?
We'll see what happens here. I'm not under any illusion. This company is going to really face the wrath of the criminal justice system. But it is an interesting case nonetheless. This is about 400 plaintiffs, farmers, as I understand, landscape architects and other people who say that sustained exposure to glyphosate chemicals within Roundup have caused, I believe, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in many of them through the years. Depending on who you ask, whose studies you look at, which medical associations you're partial to, there is kind of divergent opinions about whether or not these Roundup chemicals lead to cancer. The European Union has successively tried to, through the years, ban the sale of Roundup in Europe with mixed results. In the U.S., it's going to be hard to imagine a big chemical producer like Monsanto being squeezed out by, you know, regulating members of the Republican Congress. That said, barring some sort of breakthrough where Monsanto really is held to account here, I think what I'll be most interested in is, you know, what evidence did they produce in the case of the suit to show that these chemicals are 100% safe? And what kind of paper trail can we get on how that research is getting funded through the process of the lawsuit? Much like tobacco and some other things in the past, it's always fascinating what lawsuits show us about how companies justify their own decisions and make their own claims. And I would bet as we learn more about where Monsanto's scientific claims showing their products are 100% safe, we'll begin to see some patterns of the think tanks and research institutes they support financially here. So that'll be an interesting trial to watch.
No, you're absolutely right. And at the end of the day, Roundup kills stuff. So, I mean, I don't know that it could possibly be 100% safe. Sorry, just not buying it.
Yeah, that our non-scientific take here is probably right on the money to a certain extent. So we'll see how the court case goes.
Luke, safe travels to you. Be safe. I look forward to hearing your reporting from Russia and from all across the Baltics.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. Luke Vargas, Talk Media News. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to the Rick Smith Show.
For and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show. Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.